iGlobal Radio, the hub of podcasts for and about global Indians. From news and views to wellness, entertainment, money matters, and much, much more. On air at iGlobalNews.com.
iGlobalNews.com.
iGlobal Radio, brought to you by iGlobalNews.com.
Hello and welcome to the iMoney Show right here on iGlobal Radio. My name's Tony Patty and we today are joined by the highly esteemed Alpesh Patel. Now, Alpesh Patel is a top professional trader in the financial analysts market in the UK and he's the founder of a FCA regulated asset management firm managing millions of dollars in investments. Now, Alpesh's media profile and business, political and economic expertise has been utilised by the UK government for more than a decade, from London to New Delhi and Beijing, accompanying the Prime Minister and ministers, business leaders on trade missions, as well as by the largest and most respected global businesses as an advocate, utilising his training as a barrister for growth strategies and business, friendly policies for wealth creation, diversity whilst engaging legislators and policymakers. Well, with such a stellar background and a fantastic portfolio, it's only right that we should invite Alpesh Patel back onto the iMoney Show right here at iGlobal Radio and get the insights on the way things are going so far. Alpesh, a very warm welcome to you and thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks. What a wonderful introduction. I will record that and replay it to myself when I'm feeling incompetent. If I call the markets wrong, then
you can always replay this to yourself. Yes, okay.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll be more than happy to repeat it for you on several occasions. No problem at all. So, Alpesh, once again, a warm welcome. Economic activity around the world has been up and down. COVID has been with us and passed, or still with us in various aspects. And globally, the whole financial markets have perhaps begun to recover from the unprecedented falls in output during the first half of, let's say, 2021. And onwards, which followed the restrictions imposed last year to manage and reduce the spread of coronavirus. However, the extent of economic recovery in the coming months towards the close of the year remains highly uncertain, as new restrictions are introduced and coronavirus cases are also still with us. And also, as we've seen in the news recently, back on the increase again across Europe and beyond. So, in terms of overview, where are we going with our financial markets, Alpesh?
Well, I think one thing COVID taught us was follow the data. You know, they kept rolling out the scientists. So let me sort of be the financial markets data scientist, if I may, because our perceptions are often very different to what the data shows us. And it's just human nature, isn't it? We develop all these biases, or we get a bit of information from here, somebody says something there.
Yeah.
And then you look at the data and you think, oh my God, that's completely different to what I believed. And so I'm going to give you some very surprising facts. First of all, let's turn to the US. We're at all-time highs. I mean, forget we're coming out of a recovery. Tony, we're at all-time highs on the US markets. And that will probably come as a big surprise to a lot of people. And they might say, oh, no, that's just some of the tech stocks. Now, we're talking about the index, the basket of stocks. Not every stock's at an all-time high.
Yeah.
But if you take the S&P 500, which is the 500 largest companies, or you even take the Dow Jones 30, that's 30 companies which are in that index. So we're not just talking the technology-rich NASDAQ. We're at all-time highs. And I was looking at the data before... before this call. And one of the reasons we're at all-time highs is earnings. Earnings have been, i.e. profits. Earnings means profits. Profits have been continuing upwards. Obviously, not for everybody, but for enough companies to drive those stock prices higher. So this is not, you know, us saying, oh, it's just people getting overexcited. Again, looking at the data, if profits are pushing stock prices higher, then of course we're a lot calmer about that. We're not getting so worried that, oh, this is just nonsense, that it's or some kind of bubble. Of course, there are some overvaluations, and those concerns remain about inflation, about interest rates, all things which could cause a headwind. But all-time highs, and if I might With India, let's look at the Indian market, because I was looking at that this week. I had course to look at that. That's the fastest growing economy, and its stock market has risen some 60-odd% in, I think it's something like 18 months. I'll put those numbers up. I'll just dig those numbers up whilst we're speaking. So not bad at all. It's just that the UK has been a bit flat. So, you know, your listeners, if they're predominantly here, won't be feeling it. The ones out in India will definitely be feeling the love. Yeah, so here we go. Over the last 1 year, it's 62%.
Okay.
The Indian index, a broad index of Indian stocks, is up 62%.
Substantial.
In this, you know, given all the doom and gloom we see on the news. So, yeah, over to you.
But when it comes to our nation's economy, it can easily seem like there's nothing but good news. And you just mentioned that things are up, stock markets are up. Headlines repeatedly highlighted low unemployment and ongoing job growth, which contributes to a public narrative that the economy is strong. So the Great Recession, it seems, must be behind us. Is that right, Albush?
Well, I mean, we've got to caveat all of this, because your listeners will say, hang on, the stock market isn't the economy. They will rightly say, and I've just written an article, which I'm not sure if it's gone live yet online, about how ethnic minorities, which will be the vast majority of your listeners, don't participate in investing in the stock market. And they're already suffering from a wage gap. We know this from the data. And that's then accentuated because they're not investing, if they're able to, in the stock market. So they'll be feeling a bit left out of all of this and saying, well, that's all right for you to say, Alpesh, you're just complete. You must be in some kind of ivory tower, because our salaries are lower than our white colleagues. And so we're not in the stock market, or if our pension is, it's a small amount in any event.
Log on to iGlobalNews.com. iGlobal, the go-to multimedia platform for and about global Indians.
iGlobal Radio is the brand new hub of podcasts for and about global Indians. News, views, interviews, wellness, money matters, and much, much more. Tune in to iGlobal Radio at iGlobalNews.com. A large share of America's workers do earn low wages than do workers in other high-income nations. It's the same over here in the UK. And wage gaps, as you mentioned earlier, between white workers and workers of colour persist. In fact, some gaps have even widened, wouldn't you say, Alpesh?
Yeah, again, following the data, I researched this, and the article that I'm going to put up on my various social media places later today looks at that data. And I'm afraid you're right. It's widened despite everything that we've said. I mean, I looked at ethnic minorities broadly, both in the US and the UK. So that did include sort of, because you know, within ethnic minorities, there are big disparities. And actually, even within subcategories, so, you know, Bangladeshis and Pakistanis will be earning less than, say, Indians if you take them as a blob. And then Southeast Asians will generally be earning more than the black population, for instance, as a general rule. So breaking all that data down, the bottom line is, in a broad brush, the gap has continued to widen. And then if you're not investing either, or you're not as financially literate, and I was at this London Stock Exchange just last week at a campaign on boosting financial literacy, then that gap, that wage gap, then becomes a savings gap, which then becomes an investment gap, becomes a pensions gap. So you carry it for the rest of your life, from youth to old age. Now, we're pretty, as a community, the British Indian community, is pretty financially savvy, but it tends to be in pockets. It tends to be financially savvy on savings.
Yeah.
It tends to be, you know, i.e. saving money, because historically, we came here as a sort of a working class population, and then come with silver spoons. So that we're savvy on that, but we're savvy on real estate.
Yeah.
We might be savvy on running a business, but we won't necessarily be savvy on investing as much. And so there remains a gap, which then makes the pre-existing wage gap and salary gap even worse. So that's, again, a problem that hasn't quite yet been addressed, whether it's through financial literacy, whether it's through starting pensions at a smaller gap, whether it's through amending the tax system. But we saw, again, with COVID, that our community suffered more. And it suffered more pro rata because of the nature of housing or because of the nature of race. I don't mean racism, but just how race had determined demographics and social condition. And that then meant that the virus had more of a disproportionate impact upon us. And it's the same with investing and finance. It becomes disproportionate. These small these small differences become larger and larger, and it's our job to make sure we narrow them.
Log on to iglobalnews.com. iGlobal, the go-to multimedia platform for and about global Indians.
iGlobal is one-of-a-kind multimedia platform for all things global Indian, from the latest community news to the big political interviews, from entertainment and fashion to personal wealth and wellness. iGlobal is where the vibrant Indian diaspora gets seen and heard. Log on at iglobalnews.com. We are talking to Alpesh Patel, economic strategist, and we are talking about the current state of the economy. We are going to be talking about shares and how to get into the stock markets and dispel some of the myths in today's discussion before the close of this program. But Alpesh, would it be fair to say that those at the bottom of the income ladder are falling further behind those than at the top? And you mentioned that a little earlier on, you slightly sort of like touched on that briefly. And the workers' share of national income has not improved from its post-recession low that we had.
Yes, it and this often comes as a surprise to people because they say, well, wait a minute, we have so many government, whatever the government colour is, how come these data points, you know, all ships might rise. In other words, we're not living, the people at the bottom of the ladder are not living in the same level of poverty as a general rule as they were post-war. So everybody's got wealthier. However, part of that measurement is also the gap. Now, you might say, well, what does the gap matter? You know, who cares if the billionaires have got richer? We really want to just see all boats rising. We want to see the bottom of the ladder rising. And a gap, in one sense, is irrelevant, you might argue. The thing about the gap becomes it does tend to lead to, as I said, social discontent and more fissures, more fractures within society as well, and a society which becomes less community because, guess what? People start living in more gated communities in their own little bubbles. Whereas if the gap's narrower, then you're going to most likely get more social cohesion and less societal disruption. Anyway, if we go to that wage gap issue, and what COVID has done again is, and you might argue, well, it was always like this, wasn't it? The poorest have, of course, disproportionately suffered. Mm. And that's the way things are, but partly because they're the ones who won't necessarily have at hand the resources which would have helped them. And that's something which I think we don't... We know the poor will not, of course... be able to cope with things the same way richer people would, as a general rule. That's obvious. They've got less resources. But I don't think the multiplier effect, that the extent to which the disproportionality, that the amount of leverage negatively that impacts upon them, I don't think that factor's understood. So you might say, well, of course, if you haven't got the same amount of money, you're not going to have the same healthcare, you're not going to have, you know, eat nicer foods or whatever else it might be, which might boost your health and immune system, et cetera, et cetera. That's not all. It's the fact that it happens at a faster rate. It happens more disproportionately, according to the data, than you would assume. And that's another reason why it's important from a justice, social justice perspective, to make sure that we handle that issue. It's not proportionate. It's not just that because I'm a billionaire, I'll do a billion times better than somebody with a pound in their pocket. Mm. I'll end up doing 10 billion times better. And that's fine for me. But it's even worse for them, is my point.
You mentioned earlier on that people are not investing and when it comes to shares and stocks and things. And that was, you also mentioned, probably due to lack of information or lack of knowing and understanding how it works. So let's just dispel some of the myths and understand what are shares, what are stocks, and what determines their prices, and how do you go about stock trading? This is something which is right up your street. You've been doing it for many years. You've written about it. You're an advocate in it. Let's talk about it. What are shares?
Yeah. Well, let me even, if I go one step before that, is why it's important. There was a research survey recently which showed that the majority of people didn't realize that their pensions are invested in the stock market.
Mm.
So it's not that I want people to go out and buy shares for, you know, just because I'm particularly keen on it, because many will see it as speculation and gambling. And it's a bit like crossing the road. Yeah, if you don't look both ways, crossing the road, speculation and gambling, and I don't recommend you do it. But guess what? Why do we cross the road? Well, the benefits outweigh the costs. And if we look both ways, i.e. we gather all the information, then it's an activity worth doing. It benefits us. Similarly to driving.
Yes, very well put.
Do it with your eyes closed, it's speculation and gambling. Do it with your eyes open, and the benefits outweigh the dangers. So why is it important? Well, your pension, believe it or not, is in there. Now, what happens is you work as an employer, or you work as an employee, or you do a self-invested personal pension, and that money is automatically going into stocks, particularly if you blindly give it to a fund manager who then distributes it into whichever companies they fancy. So what I'm saying is your old age is already tied to the stock market. Given that that's the case, and given that workplace pensions are mandatory, so it's going to happen whether you want it or not, you can't opt out of it as such. And if you've got savings then sitting in a bank account, you're getting next to 0%, then we better find out a bit whether or not this is something worth doing. And I'm not saying you're going to ignore all the speculative oil mining companies and gold mining companies and the sort of tiny companies.
Yes.
I mean, the example I start off giving people is, let's just start off with a Microsoft, which is probably the safest company I can think of. And you might argue otherwise with me. You might say, oh, it's overvalued, whatever. But let's just take it as read. It's one of the safest companies in the world. It's not about to go bust. It's been growing for the last few years, almost certainly will continue growing for the foreseeable future. Okay, I'm not talking 10 years. I'm just talking 12 to 24 months. Pretty safe bet you're going to outperform your bank account. It'll be more volatile than your bank account, obviously, but you'll outperform. So it's a good one to sort of think of.
Yeah.
Well, that's partly what your pension's going to be in. And so it might be worthwhile buying some shares in this. And it's easy to buy shares. You can go to Halifax or Barclays or whatever online, or Hargreaves Lansdown. You see these adverts everywhere, and AJ Bell. I don't want to sort of promote any one particular broker, but there's many out there. And you say, well, I've got £1,000. I want to buy £1,000 worth of shares. And they've made it so much easier now than it was, 30, 40 years ago. They'll do the calculations. They'll tell you, right, that's how many shares you'll have. That's the company. Boom, you've done it.
Yep.
Okay. It's always important to sort of break your cherry, as it were, with something straightforward and easy. Of course, assuming it's suitable for you. I mean, you don't want to. The best way to mitigate risk is to elongate your time frame with a particular. Or if we assume the companies are equal, then you don't want to try and do this for a day or a month or a week, and you don't want to do it if it's money that you're going to need in that time frame.
Correct.
But if it's excess money and savings, and you believe that you've judged your risk profile, and then I say if an investment should be at least 12 months. Okay, and then I review it. So even with a Microsoft or an Apple or an Amazon or an Alphabet, all of which I own, I would hold for 12 months and I'd review. And guess what? For the last few years, of course, they've done rather well.
They have.
But there'll be others, there might be, you might have looked at, and again, a big giant like Netflix and seen their results come out yesterday, late last night in the US, and thought to yourself, well, actually,
they've done rather well, yes.
Is that suitable for me? Now, you've got a diverse audience. I can't possibly say to the 90-year-old lady widow, let's say, listening to this, compared to the 20-something multimillionaire with his, Ferrari parked outside, that the same stocks are relevant. Because I can't possibly give financial advice to people I don't even know. So what I'd say is, but equally, I don't want to say something as trite and silly and pointless as you must do your own research. But if we were to look at specific names, you should at least educate yourself on what is your pension in? What is your pension fund manager investing in? Because they'll have to tell you. And if you find that they've invested in British American Tobacco and you think to yourself, what on earth? Why would he invest in tobacco, when I could have just bought some Microsoft? You may well say to yourself, well, actually, you know what? I'm going to do a bit of this on the side myself with some excess savings and risk capital, and I'm going to see if I can beat that fund manager and what he's doing. And then eventually I might sell him, get rid of your funds, mate. I'm putting them in myself. But like I said, thankfully, these brokers give, like I said, you want a big household name like a Barclays or a Halifax or whatever, some of you've heard.
Something which is their
education I trust. Yeah.
Log on to iGlobalNews.com. iGlobal, the go-to multimedia platform for and about global Indians.
Alpesh, to me, stocks are the shares into which ownership of the company is divided. And those who own stocks are called stockholders or shareholders. So what happens as far as the ownership of shares is concerned, and what are you actually entitled to?
Yeah, well, what you've got to remember is most people don't actually care about the ownership rights. There's by being a shareholder in a company, so if I've got, you know, one share in Microsoft, most people don't care that it allows me to attend the annual general meeting. It allows me to vote on various things like the board of directors, remuneration packages, and so on. So the legal rights, most people don't care about. What do they actually care about? They care about the money they're going to get. Now, money comes in two forms. Either it's going to be dividends, okay, which is just income, a share of the profits, which a company may or may not choose to give you. They might say, no, we're not going to pay any of the profits that we've earned as dividends. What we're going to do is reinvest it in the company. The other part you get is the capital gain. So it's either dividend income or capital gain, which is you bought at 100, you sold at 110. That's 10% capital gain you've made. That's what most people really care about, is the growth. And especially in a low interest rate environment where dividends, if they're paid, are going to only match bank accounts and a little bit more, not much more. So you're thinking to yourself, well, I'm not really bothered about the income part. It's going to be minuscule. I really want the capital gain from the company. And that's what you're really, that's what your audience really will be thinking at the back of their head if they put their mind to it, that what they want is their pension to grow.
We are talking to Alpesh Patel, economic strategist and advocate today, right here on the iMoney Show on iGlobal Radio. What determines share prices, Alpesh? Because generally speaking, from my knowledge, the price of a company's shares will constantly fluctuate and they are influenced by the company's performance and profitability. So what determines share prices?
It's a bit like the weather. I can get you the biggest supercomputer on the planet, it's not necessarily going to be it. And I can put all the inputs in with the weather, saying, oh, it's you know, wind from the Gulf of Mexico, it's sea temperature, it's a whole variety of various other things. And guess what happens? You still get drenched and you look at the weather forecast and you think, what the hell? Well, I'm afraid the stock market's like that. I can put a whole bunch of inputs, such as company forecasts, what bloggers have said, what the CEO of the company just tweeted, as well as its earnings reports, its revenue growth. All companies have three, and a lot of your audience will be business people, so they'll appreciate this. They have three sets of accounts: cash flow, profit and loss, and the balance sheet. And you say, well, it's got to do with the assets, it's got to do with the debt of the company, it's got to do with its forward orders, it's got to do with its prospects, what the analysts might say, whether a bank has upgraded it. Now, can you imagine the number of input factors I've got to put in it? It's like forecasting the weather, you know. It's exactly the similar kind of job. So you put all this into a supercomputer, and guess what? The vast majority of people still get it wrong.
Thank you for listening to iGlobal Radio, the hub of podcasts for and about global Indians. Find out more on iGlobalNews.com.
Alpesh Patel, you are a top professional trader and financial analyst in the UK, an economic strategist and advocate. If people want to find out more about trading stocks and shares and financial markets, and certainly become their own fund managers, as you've just told us, how can they go about seeking your advice and either getting in touch with you or going into the right direction to do that? Are there resources available for people?
Yes, well, I'm very pleased and proud to say I got an award from the chief executive of the London Stock Exchange last week, who presented me with a plaque for promoting financial literacy.
Oh, super.
So, you can, for those listening, they won't be able to see it, but you'll be able to see it, Tony. And I created a campaign where and it's completely free resources. I took all my books, which, Tony, you can see over my shoulder, and converted them into little videos, little bite-sized three-minute articles and so on, because that's the world we live in. You know, people want bite-sized. And I didn't want my books to become irrelevant, because who reads books anymore? They watch videos, don't they? We know that.
Yeah.
So I converted all those, put all those resources online for free, and allowed people to download my book. So there's me. You might say, well, you're no financial genius, Alpesh. You're foregoing your royalties. But my view is, I'm all right, thanks. download the books, and they're all on my campaignforamillion.com. So that's why the campaignforamillion.com came up, came from, and they've got access. They've got my WhatsApp on there. They've got the instant messenger and everything else. And there's a little educational course on there, which sort of teaches them in a structured manner. And I'd say, you know, get your kids onto it. I started when I was 12. But yeah, get your kids onto it. Or if you're a pensioner, at least you'll be able to ask the right questions to your IFA, your financial advisor.
Please note, past performance is not a guarantee of future performance. All investments can fall as well as rise in value, and you can lose some or all of your money. Additionally, this podcast does not constitute an investment recommendation.
iGlobal Radio, the hub of podcasts for and about global Indians. From news and views to wellness, entertainment, money matters, and much, much more. On air at iGlobalNews.com.